And welcome to Cable X. At your service. Brad Young in with you this evening on a Wednesday night, like I am most Wednesday evenings. I get to hang out with the cool kids. Who are the cool kids? That's you. That's you. You're the cool kids tonight, because the reason why I do this show, as I like to say, not every week, but often, is that I love the interaction with this audience. Phone calls are always welcome, unless we're doing an interview. We only have one interview this evening, and that'll be coming up around 8:17. After that interview, the rest of the show tonight, phone lines are always open, 314-436-7900. Also, text lines are open. And if you're not familiar with this format on a Wednesday night, the premise of this show is that you, the audience, get to be a part of how this show moves forward. You can't do that with a podcast. You can't do that with streaming. You can't do that with a TV show. There's literally nowhere else where you can do that other than this type of media. So you text in, you call in, even if it's something that we're not talking about. Listen, I'm not afraid of any question. There is no question that I'm afraid of. So the only thing that I'm concerned about, not afraid, I'm concerned about FCC violations. But of course, that's why we have Ethan Hannaford running the board tonight, who's got his hand on the proverbial kill switch.
Ready to go right now.
Ready to go.
I'd rather not have to use it, though.
Well, you know what's interesting? During the break, Ethan said he was going to use the kill switch on me. And I'm like, wait a minute, you can't do that. Don't use the kill switch on me, man.
It was just, you know, we got to keep you in line now. And it's a tough thing to do sometimes.
It is. And I want to ask you a question since I've got you here, Ethan. Today is National Buy a Musical Instrument Day. And do you play any musical instruments?
I do not currently. I played piano for a handful of years my younger days.
Good.
And by younger days, I mean when I was in elementary school and middle school. But no, I do not play a musical instrument anymore. No.
How about any folks in your family play musical instruments?
No, not in my immediate family. A family of singers. We're all my parents were on the worship team at my church growing up.
Good.
My sister is now on the worship team. So a lot of singing, but not a lot of instruments.
Well, I grew up playing the drums.
Okay.
Played in a couple of rock bands, and then went to play drums on the worship team at my church for 15, 20 years. So I've got a lot of experience with drums. But I don't know if you've ever talked to anybody in high school that was a drummer in the high school band, but drummers in high school get a really bad rap. No, they don't. It's justified. For example, when I was in high school, the big thing was people would go into the drum room and smoke cigarettes. Now, they were cigarettes. It wasn't weed. They were smoking cigarettes in there. And one day I'm out playing and there's a smoke coming out of the drum room. And I thought, there can't be smoking that many cigarettes. Well, somebody threw their cigarette in the trash can. Trash can catches on fire.
And, oh, my goodness.
And then it's all because of the drummers. So, yeah, drummers get a bad rap, but sometimes I think they deserve it. So I got to tell you this, though, and I want you to have what is a ute ready to go here in just a second. But my cousin Vinny. You ever seen the movie My Cousin Vinny? What do you think about it?
I have not actually seen that movie.
Oh, Ethan.
I know. Sometimes I'm a little bit uncultured with the older movies.
Okay. Well, you got to watch this movie.
Okay.
Because I got to tell you, last night, my wife and I and my youngest daughter were watching My Cousin Vinny. And I had forgotten. It's been a while since I've seen this movie. And I had forgotten how good it is, not just from a movie's perspective, because it's hilarious, but most movies that present or portray court proceedings are just awful. They're terrible. They're inaccurate. That's why I have trouble watching legal dramas, because I just go, oh, wait, that couldn't happen. And I'm so caught up in the problems of of what they're portraying that I lose track of the story, right? So I was watching this last. I forgot how legally accurate it is in a movie that's preposterous. It's so silly, but it's so legally on point. So I called a good friend of mine, Matt Patberg, and he's going to be joining us after the break. But if you don't remember anything from My cousin Vinny, I'm sure you'll remember this.
Is it possible the two Utes...
Two what? What was that word?
What word?
Two what?
What?
Did you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
Oh, excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths. Is it possible the two defendants entered the store, picked...
So, you know, what is a Ute is actually, I forgot, it's on the American Film Institute's list of greatest movie quotes. What is a Ute? And that should get you in the mood. So when we come back from this break, Matt Padberg and I are going to break down. I got some audio clips from the movie. I chose audio clips that did not have expletives. And if we hear an expletive, Ethan, it's up to you, because I may have missed one. That's why we got to have that kill switch ready to go. But hopefully we won't hear any of those. But the bottom line is, we're going to break down My Cousin Vinny from a legal perspective. That's what we do on Wednesday nights. We have fun. We talk legal stuff. We talk culture. And later in the show, we're going to talk about the American dream. Does it still exist? Can it be achieved? And really, what does it mean to achieve that American dream? We've got some polling data and some information on that. And then, of course, phone lines will be open. Brad Young at your service on a Wednesday night here on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening until 10 o'clock. And as I mentioned before the break, I just watched My Cousin Vinny again last night for the first time in years. And I was so impressed. I didn't remember being this impressed last time I saw it, but I was impressed with how accurate it was legally. Because listen, if you've watched any legal show, Law and Order, CSI, I don't care, Matlock, you're going to know that when you watch those shows, they're just terrible when it comes to portraying stuff that happens in court. And then you think about a movie like My Cousin Vinny that's preposterously funny, but yet it's kind of legally accurate, too. So I wanted to reach out to a good friend of mine, Matt Padberg, who's a trial attorney right here in St. Louis. He represents folks who have been injured, have personal injury lawsuits. Hey, Matt, welcome to KMOX.
Good evening, Brad. How you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. And the reason why I reached out to you today, because in addition to your advocacy on behalf of plaintiffs here in the St. Louis area, in addition to that, you're also an adjunct professor at St. Louis University School of Law, aren't you?
That's correct. In a trial ed program. It's to teach young lawyers how to handle themselves in the courtroom.
Wow. And I was stunned because a mutual friend of ours told me that in your work as an adjunct professor at St. Louis U Law School, my alma mater, by the way, that you actually use My Cousin Vinny to teach future attorneys how to practice law. Is that true?
That's exactly right. Of course, and I tell my students, you kind of got to get past the first part of the movie where Joe Pesci really can't get his feet under him, but he collects himself well enough to do some very, very effective and very real cross-examination.
He does. And we're going to play a few clips, and I want to get your analysis, and we can have a discussion of it. But in case you've never seen the movie, first of all, you need to watch it. My Cousin Vinny. And the setup is that Joe Pesci is a New Yorker with a very strong New York accent. And his cousin, his younger cousin and his cousin's buddy are charged with murder in this small Georgia rural town. So you have the cultural clash between someone from New York who just, we're not even sure if he really passed the bar or not, and from him, and then you've got the judge and the prosecuting attorney and all the witnesses who are Southern Georgia drawl, very thick drawls, and they're just not, they're not used to someone from New York coming down there and practicing law in their courtroom. So with that background, Matt, I want to play this clip. This is the clip of the cross-examination of the expert who is talking about the tires that were on the vehicle of the defendants, allegedly on the vehicle of the defendants. And here is the cross-examination by Joe Pesci.
Is it possible
two separate cars could be driving on Michelin model XGV75R14s?
Of course.
Let me ask you this. What's the best-selling single model tire being sold in the United States today?
The Michelin XGV.
And what's the most popular size?
75R14.
The same size as on the defendant's car.
But two faded green 1964 Buick Skylark convertible?
Excuse me. What I'm asking you is if the most popular size of the most popular tire is on the defendant's car.
Well, yeah.
No further questions.
Now, it's hard for me to not laugh because I just watched the movie, Matt, last night, and I'm still laughing. Just hearing that scene, I'm still laughing at it. But as you hear that clip, and again, it was very hard to get clips that weren't laden with expletives, but in that clip, how is it that Joe Pesci's character, who in the movie seems to be bumbling, he doesn't know anything, he certainly doesn't know how to dress properly in court, I'll tell you that, but he moves from that to what we just heard. What did you hear in there that, from your perspective, not only as a trial attorney, but as an adjunct professor who teaches young attorneys how to practice law in the courtroom, what strikes you about that from your analytical point of view?
Well, what we teach lawyers who are going to be in the courtroom about cross-examination is that cross-examination is about control. And so what I mean by that is that the lawyer is controlling the dialogue as opposed to the witness. You compare that with a direct exam where the lawyer is asking a witness questions and asks very open-ended questions and allows the witness to give long, flowery answers. The object of cross-examination is to ask short, direct questions that the questioner knows the answer to in advance and that the witness really can't wiggle around. Now, with this expert he had in the movie, this expert did kind of wiggle around there. You could hear him at the end saying, well, two cars, you know, two different cars with the same tires. But Joe Pesci's starting to, or had earlier in the trial, and I think we'll hear from this later, you know, asking very direct, short cross-examination questions to the witnesses. And he was giving his theory of the case with each question. He was doing a good job with this expert, and then the expert kind of wiggled off the hook there at the end by just saying, well, yeah, but there's, what are the odds of this happening?
Mm-hmm. But one thing I want to come back to, Matt, is when you say that in each question, there's a portion of every cross-examination question that contains nuggets of the story that the attorney is trying to tell to the jury.
That's exactly right. The attorney, and that's what makes cross-examination so interesting, and actually it could be very, for the trial, or the best part of the trial, because you're allowed to lead the witness. You can't lead other witnesses except in cross-examination. And when you lead the witness, that means you can lead the witness right to your answer. So isn't it true that this car has the most popular tire of the most popular car in the country and so on? And the witness is left to just say yes or no. You don't want to build in an opportunity for the witness to explain themselves, to divert and get off on another topic. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, he's into the trial now, and you can really see that he's starting to figure it all out. And that's exactly where we want to see our students, starting to figure out exactly how to ask these questions.
Absolutely. We're talking to trial attorney Matt Patberg, who practices right here in St. Louis, primarily representing personal injury plaintiffs. And we'll get to some of his contact info in just a few minutes. But I want to go to this second clip. And the second clip was one of the two alleged eyewitnesses. And of this eyewitness, he claims that he saw the defendants. I think it's Ralph Macchio is one of the two defendants. One of the two defendants who are leaving the scene, allegedly leaving the scene of the crime. This guy's a witness, and here, alleged witness anyway. But here's how Joe Pesci handles the cross-examination of this alleged eyewitness.
Well, what are these pictures of?
My house and stuff.
House and stuff. And what is this brown stuff on the windows?
Dirt.
Dirt? What is this rusty, dusty, dirty-looking thing over your window?
It's a screen.
A screen. It's a screen. And what are these really big things right in the middle of your view from the window of your kitchen to the sack of suds? What do we call these big things?
Trees?
Trees, that's right. Don't be afraid. Just shout them right out when you know. Now, what are these thousands of little things that are on trees?
Leaves.
Leaves. And these bushy things between the trees.
Bushes.
Bushes. Right. So, Mr. Cran, you could positively identify the defendants for a moment of 2 seconds looking through this dirty window, this crud-covered screen, these trees with all these leaves on them, and I don't know how many bushes.
7 bushes.
7 bushes. So, what do you think? Is it possible you just saw 2 guys in a green convertible and not necessarily these 2 particular guys?
Well, I suppose.
I'm finished with this guy.
So on this, Matt Padberg, you talked a moment ago about how even in cross-examination, your questions should be short and you should be emphasizing the theory of the case, the story that you're trying to tell the jury. In this clip that we just heard, how does Joe Pesci demonstrate what you just described a few minutes ago?
Well, he does a really artful job of this, or I guess the writers of the movie did an artful job. So he takes each of these obstructions to his vision one at a time. What's on the window? Well, there's dirt, and then there's a screen, and then there's trees, and then there's leaves, and there's bushes. And he does such an effective job, and they're all very short questions, and the witness, as you can hear, is giving one-word answers. When Joe finally asks his important question, which is, do you think you can identify through dirt and screen and trees and leaves and bushes, do you really think you could identify the 2 defendants? At that point, he's done such a nice job, it doesn't matter what the answer is any longer. He's already told the jury and convinced the jury
exactly
that there's no way this guy could have identified these people.
Yeah, and so to me, that's the beauty of that. And I even stopped the movie last night, and my wife and I were talking about it, because you're right that normally we think the answers are so important. But in this context, you're right. It didn't even matter what the witness said. The jury was ready to believe that the witness could not have seen these guys just based on the questions themselves.
Right, right.
Ah,
and that's artful cross-examination right there.
Yeah, with obviously with a touch of humor that we normally don't see that kind of humor in courtroom. You know, I've tried to crack jokes in court before, Matt, and it does not go well.
Especially with Fred Gwynn as your judge.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him to be against me. I wouldn't want to get on his bad side because, I mean, the dude's like 7 feet tall. But in any event, I wanted just to give this as an example because so often, Matt, and I know this happens to you, but don't you get questions from people when they say, oh, I see this on TV, and is this really what court is really like? Don't you get those questions?
Oh, I get them all the time, and I have clients who come in and they'll have a deposition they're going to be prepared for, which is a question and answer session with the opposing attorney. And I always say, it's not like TV. There's no fist pounding on the table. It's not high drama. They're just here to ask you questions in a very reasonable way. And yeah, it's rare to see a movie that actually captures a true courtroom experience.
Mm. And that's why I was so entertained when I heard that you actually use this movie as a basis, partially, to teach law students, to teach young attorneys how to handle themselves in the courtroom. To me, that's just fabulous. If folks, and we're talking to Matt Padberg, trial attorney here in St. Louis, and Matt, if folks want to reach out to you, not just based on your experience as a trial attorney, but easily based also on your experience as an adjunct professor teaching others how to do what you do, how can folks reach you if they've got legal needs that they need to discuss?
Well, the firm is called Padberg, Applebaum, and Knepper. We're downtown on Shoto Avenue. We've got a phone number of 314-621-2900. And if you were to Google just my last name, you'd find us pretty easily.
That's great. Matt Padberg, hey, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to really educate the St. Louis area about how the courtroom really works, even if it's through the veil of, jokes from Joe Pesci.
Well, thanks, Brad. It was a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you, sir. Hey, when we come back, we're going to get into the news of the day. Phone lines will be open. I've already gotten some texts this evening. Thank you very much. This show is about you, and I'd love to hear from you. 314-436-7900. And before we run to the break, what is your favorite legal movie? or legal TV show. Again, I don't watch a lot of them because they're, it's just hard for me to do that. But I have been watching The Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix. Love that. But what is your favorite legal show, legal movie, and why do you like it? 314-436-7900 on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. And I wanted to dive into this topic because this is somewhat breaking news. Earlier today, we had a ruling on the case involving Marnice Duclos. Now, you might say, who is that? Well, Marnice Duclos is one of the young women who was in that fight with Kylie Gain. It was over near Hazelwood East High School. And we've all seen the videos. The videos are really rather horrific. And it starts out, the two girls, if you've seen the videos, the two girls are kind of squaring off and they're getting ready to start a fight. And then they start fighting. Now, I represent a lot of convenience stores where fights happen all the time. And so I've had video of so many fights. And usually, in most instances, no one really gets hurt. A few bruises, bruised egos, but no one really gets hurt. But in this case, with the individual who was injured, Kylie Gain, in this fight with Marnice Duclos, there was a very, very severe injury. And if you remember, the video shows Ms. Duclos, who was holding Kylie Gain down on the ground, and then she was repeatedly slamming Kylie Gain's head into the concrete, and repeatedly, to the point where she was unconscious. She was in a coma. She had a brain bleed. The coma lasted for days, if not weeks. And now I understand that Kylie Gain is out of the hospital. But the point of setting all this up is for this. The question was, from a legal standpoint, could Marnice Duclos, should she be charged as a juvenile or should she be charged as an adult? What's the difference? Well, the difference is that if you're charged as a juvenile, you have the opportunity to serve a much less of a sentence and also have your record clean whenever you become an adult. Now, in this case, Marnice Duclos, the defendant who is charged with injuring severely Kylie Gain, she's 15 years old. So the question was, should she be charged as a juvenile or charged as an adult? Now, under Missouri law, the way this works is that this is a decision by a judge. There's no jury involved. There are recommendations made by officials to say juvenile court officials can make recommendations. This is what we think based upon certain factors. Now, some of the factors that go into play in terms of whether a person is charged as a juvenile or an adult, the age of the defendant, the charge that's being levied against the defendant, and their prior criminal record. Those are the main elements that are used to evaluate how these youths, I won't say youths, how they are charged. And in this case, the judge determined today, Judge Jason Dotson, decided that Marnice Duclos should be charged as a juvenile, not as an adult. So what does that mean? Well, the charge is first-degree assault. And when this case eventually goes to trial, unlike if you go to trial in adult court, so to speak, you get a jury. In most instances, you get access to a jury. But in juvenile court, it's not the case. In juvenile court, it only goes to a judge. It's a judge-tried case. So then the question becomes, is this the right outcome? Should the judge, and if you've seen the video, I would like to hear your analysis of the video, but should the judge have found that Marnice Duclos is going to be remaining in juvenile court? Or, in your opinion, should she have been tried as an adult? Now, the judge found several factors. You know, I mentioned those factors a moment ago. He looked at her age. She's 15 years old. Now, the age of majority is around 17 or 18, so that was a close call. But in this case, Marnice Duclos also had no prior criminal record, no history of any bad acts, no evidence that she had been arrested previously, certainly not charged. So because of that, and those factors, the judge said she should be staying in juvenile court. But the question then becomes, you've seen the horrific nature of that video. And I guess the question that was in my mind as I was analyzing all of the different issues that go into play here, the question in my mind was, does the horrific nature of repeatedly pounding, we got video, so there's really no question about what happened, but does the horrific nature of repeatedly pounding a girl's head on the concrete, on the pavement repeatedly, to the point where her brain was just rattling around in her skull, does that go against those other factors that should that go into play here in terms of how these people are charged? We've got some folks waiting on the phones now. We're going to go to Gail in St. Charles. Hey, Gail, welcome to KMOX.
Hello.
Hey, Gail. Hi. Listen to me, not your radio. Turn your radio down and you and I can chat. Welcome to KMOX.
I was checking because I never told him I was from St. Charles. But anywho.
Okay.
In terms of this topic, I don't hear that you said in your opening portion that the young girl who came out of the coma arrived at the fight in an Uber and that her mother was there egging her on to have this fight. And prior to having this fight with the young girl who is now being charged as a juvenile, that this young girl who was getting her head slammed to the pavement had previously been a bully to the young person that she had the fight with. Additionally, she drove to the fight in an Uber with her mother. So right. There's a problem.
There's a big price of St. Louis, KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. And I wanted to dive into this topic because this is somewhat breaking news. Earlier today, we had a ruling on the case involving Marnice DeClue. Now, you might say, who is that? Well, Marnice DeClue is one of the young women who was in that fight with Kylie Gain. It was over near Hazelwood East High School. And we've all seen the videos. The videos are really rather horrific. And it starts out, the two girls, if you've seen the videos, the two girls are kind of squaring off and they're getting ready to start a fight. And then they start fighting. Now, I represent a lot of convenience stores where fights happen all the time. And so I've had video of so many fights. And usually, in most instances, no one really gets hurt. A few bruises, bruised egos, but no one really gets hurt. But in this case, with the individual who was injured, Kaylee Gain, in this fight with Marnice DeClue, there was a very, very severe injury. And if you remember, the video shows Ms. DeClue, who was holding Kaylee Gain down on the ground, and then she was repeatedly slamming Kaylee Gain's head into the concrete, and repeatedly, to the point where she was unconscious. She was in a coma. She had a brain bleed. The coma lasted for days, if not weeks. And now I understand that Kaylee Gain is out of the hospital. But the point of setting all this up is for this. The question was, from a legal standpoint, could Marnice DeClue, should she be charged as a juvenile or should she be charged as an adult? What's the difference? Well, the difference is that if you're charged as a juvenile, you have the opportunity to serve a much less of a sentence and also have your record clean whenever you become an adult. Now, in this case, Marnice DeClue, the defendant who is charged with injuring severely Kaylee Gain, she's 15 years old. So the question was, should she be charged as a juvenile or charged as an adult? Now, under Missouri law, the way this works is that this is a decision by a judge. There's no jury involved. There are recommendations made by officials to say juvenile court officials can make recommendations. This is what we think based upon certain factors. Now, some of the factors that go into play in terms of whether a person is charged as a juvenile or an adult, the age of the defendant, the charge that's being levied against the defendant, and their prior criminal record. Those are the main elements that are used to evaluate how these youths, I won't say youths, how they are charged. And in this case, the judge determined today, Judge Jason Dotson, decided that Marnice Duclos should be charged as a juvenile, not as an adult. So what does that mean? Well, the charge is first-degree assault. And when this case eventually goes to trial, unlike if you go to trial in adult court, so to speak, you get a jury. In most instances, you get access to a jury. But in juvenile court, it's not the case. In juvenile court, it only goes to a judge. It's a judge-tried case. So then the question becomes, is this the right outcome? Should the judge, and if you've seen the video, I would like to hear your analysis of the video, but should the judge have found that Marnice Duclos is going to be remaining in juvenile court? Or, in your opinion, should she have been tried as an adult? Now, the judge found several factors. You know, I mentioned those factors a moment ago. He looked at her age. She's 15 years old. Now, the age of majority is around 17 or 18, so that was a close call. But in this case, Marnice Duclos also had no prior criminal record, no history of any bad acts, no evidence that she had been arrested previously, certainly not charged. So because of that and those factors, the judge said she should be staying in juvenile court. But the question then becomes, you've seen the horrific nature of that video. And I guess the question that was in my mind as I was analyzing all of the different issues that go into play here, the question in my mind was, does the horrific nature of repeatedly pounding, we got video, so there's really no question about what happened, but does the horrific nature of repeatedly pounding a girl's head on the concrete, on the pavement repeatedly, to the point where her brain was just rattling around in her skull, does that go against those other factors that should that go into play here in terms of how these people are charged? We've got some folks waiting on the phones now. We're going to go to Gail in St. Charles. Hey, Gail, welcome to KMOX.
Hello.
Hey, Gail. Hi. Listen to me, not your radio. Turn your radio down and you and I can chat. Welcome to KMOX.
I was checking because I never told him I was from St. Charles. But anywho.
Okay.
In terms of this topic, I don't hear that you said in your opening portion that the young girl who came out of the coma arrived at the fight in an Uber and that her mother was there egging her on to have this fight. And prior to having this fight with the young girl who is now being charged as a juvenile, that this young girl who was getting her head slammed to the pavement had previously been a bully to the young person that she had the fight with. Additionally, she drove to the fight in an Uber with her mother. So that's a problem.
There's a big problem. There's a big problem with that, Gail. And another big problem with this is I know that Kaylee Gain has been cast as the victim here, but the evidence from the video shows that Kaylee Gain took the first punch. She was the first person who threw a punch, and she punched Marnice Duclos. So in my mind, if you want to talk about who started the fight, I think that's clear that Kaylee Gain is the one who started the fight. But the question remains, when you look at the nature of the injury that was inflicted, do you think, Gail, that in of itself was enough to have Marnice Duclos charged as an adult?
She should not have been charged as an adult. She should have been charged as a youth. Kaylee Gain should also be charged being a victim of assault. She's a poor fighter, but yet she drove there in an Uber, so she had intent to cause a ruckus, and her inability to defend herself put her in this position. It's unfortunate that it was being taped and videotaped and nobody would go in and stop it. That's also unfortunate. So the society at this point needs to work on getting our youth on working on conflict resolution
Yes.
And finding ways to disarm violent situations using positive words and just learn to walk away. And that's the main point I need to say right there, because it's unfortunate we had to get to this stage that both their future lives are in jeopardy because of a moment of a lack of discipline on the part of adults and also of children, because we know children make rash decisions and they go on the bully mentality and the crowd mentality of what they're going to do, and they want to not look like they're being afraid in the situation, so they want to stand up so that they won't be a peer weak, since everything's videotaped now.
It is. Hey, Gail, we've got to come up on a break here, but I loved your perspective, and thanks for calling in this evening on Camel X. Appreciate you doing that. Hey, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, more calls, 314-436-7900. Also, we got a text here. Someone texted in, Better Call Saul as their favorite show. Outstanding show with law and the courtroom at its core. That is absolutely true. Hey, we'll be back right after this. At your service, Camel X. Coming back to At Your Service here on Camel X, and Mike has been very patient hanging through the break. Hey, Mike, welcome to Camel X.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Indeed. So, in regards to this Kaylee Gaines situation here, you know, I mean, has any details about the alleged bullying actually been divulged? I might be just not have heard this, but I keep hearing that she was bullying, but I haven't heard any details about what the alleged bullying actually was. And it just makes me wonder, to be honest.
No, you know, I've not heard about any bullying, Mike, on either side. I did read what the prior caller talked about was that Kaylee Gaines was mother was there. I have read that on mm-hmm. several occasions. But in terms of bullying, I've not heard of any bullying. I know that Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey has been investigating the Hazelwood School District to find out what officers had done. School mm-hmm. resource officers, whether there was any evidence of bullying. That investigation is ongoing. The Hazelwood School District has responded to that investigation, not really refuting the facts or trying to give information. They're just attacking the attorney general, which I don't really understand that. The investigation is legitimate. We have a horrific injury here, and we need to take steps to make sure that kids aren't horrifically injured in the future. So I have no problem with an investigation. Apparently Hazelwood School District does. But from your perspective, how did it sit with you when you heard the news about the defendant, so to speak, being charged as a juvenile?
Well, so, you know, I don't know how I felt about her being charged as an adult at first. Just because of the age, but I mean, that was a brutal attack. You know, that was bad. That looked like, you know, looked like she wanted to kill her. I mean, and so that looked particularly heinous. It really did. This wasn't just kids fighting, you know, it didn't feel like it, especially from the video. Now, I understand that it's now being kind of spun that Kaylee was the longtime bully and that's why this happened. Basically, I know she went to the fight. Her mom was there egging her on. Big problem also. I don't disagree with that. But, man, that's not a normal fight where someone's just getting their head slammed into the pavement repeatedly. So I don't know. I'm a little torn. Would it make any difference? Would it have been better if she was charged an adult? I really don't know if that would have made the situation better. But, man, this wasn't just a run-of-the-mill high school fight, you know.
And that's the concern that I had, Mike, is that because of the nature, I mean, if it just would have been, you know, a regular old fight and the kid gets beat up and Kaylee gets beat up, to me, I mean, come on. Kids fight all the time.
Right.
But that was just uniquely different in terms of how that fight ended. And I'm not saying that the court got it wrong. I'm not advocating that she should have been charged as an adult. What I'm stating is that because of that heinous nature of that ending of the fight, I could see how a judge could have found her to be charged as an adult because as a juvenile, essentially her record is wiped clean once she becomes an adult. And I don't know if that's the right outcome for someone who inflicted such terrible damage to another human being.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I guess another big part of this is that Kaylee actually came out of this coma. It seemed like she was going to die for a little while there.
It sure did.
It really did. And so the fact that she came out of it, I imagine, bared some impact on that decision on whether or not she would be charged as an adult or a child. But, man, it's just I would like to know. I want to know details about this alleged bullying leading up to the fight, because I've heard from, a few news outlets and many kind of comment sections on these articles online. People seem to assert pretty confidently that Kaylee had bullied her for a long time, but that's the extent of it. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard any details, anything. And so, I mean, if that's the case, let's hear it. These kids are minors and their names are already plastered all over, you know, news outlets all over the country, the world, probably.
But,
so, I mean,
but
you know,
Mike, it's not just about the, and I'm 100% agreeing with you, Mike, but to me, it's not just that we need those details about the kids, but we need these details so that school districts can be held accountable for allowing this kind of bullying to go on. I mean, if Kaylee was indeed bullying Marnice Duclos, then the school needs to be held accountable for allowing that bullying to be ongoing. And so I
agree. I agree.
Yeah, I don't see this as a white or a black thing. I don't see it as necessarily that one person is absolutely the aggressor and one's the victim. I see this as a teachable moment for schools to say, here's what led to a horrific injury. What can we do to prevent the next Kaylee Gaines from getting her head slammed into the pavement?
Yes, I agree. And, you know, it was not long after that, I believe, you know, teenagers got shot near Jennings or something, or another. I mean, well, you know, unfortunately.
Hey Mike, I'm going to have to cut you off here because we're coming up on a hard break, my friend. But thank you so much for calling in this evening on Camo X. I appreciate it. We've got some other folks who are also holding on the line. We've got to take a top of the hour break because, listen, Ethan, our producer, he makes a lot of money. And so we've got to go to these breaks to pay his confiscatorily high salary here at Camo X. More on At Your Service will be coming up after this. And next hour, we're going to be talking about this idea. What does it mean when we hear the term the American dream? What does that mean? Is it achievable? Is it still even in existence? Brad Young, Camo X. Very patient, hanging through the break. Hey, Mike, welcome to Camo X.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Indeed. So, in regards to this Kaylee Gaines situation here, you know, I mean, has any details about the alleged bullying actually been divulged? I might be just not have heard this, but I keep hearing that she was bullying, but I haven't heard any details about what the alleged bullying actually was, and it just makes me wonder, to be honest.
No, you know, I've not heard any. I've not heard about any bullying, Mike, on either side. I did read what the prior caller talked about was that Kaylee Gaines was mother was there. I have read that on several occasions. But in terms of bullying, I've not heard of any bullying. I know that Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey has been investigating the Hazelwood School District to find out what officers had done. School resource officers, whether there was any evidence of bullying. That investigation is ongoing. The Hazelwood School District has responded to that investigation, not really refuting the facts or trying to give information. They're just attacking the attorney general, which I don't really understand that. The investigation is legitimate. We have a horrific injury here, and we need to take steps to make sure that kids aren't horrifically injured in the future. So I have no problem with an investigation. Apparently Hazelwood School District does. But from your perspective, how did it sit with you when you heard the news about the defendant, so to speak, being charged as a juvenile?
Well, so, I don't know how I felt about her being charged as an adult at first. Just because of the age, but I mean, that was a brutal attack. You know, that was bad. That looked like, you know, looked like she wanted to kill her. I mean, and so that looked particularly heinous. It really did. This wasn't just kids fighting, you know, it didn't feel like it, especially from the video. Now I understand that it's now being kind of spun that Kaylee was the longtime bully and that's why this happened basically. And I know she went to the fight. Her mom was there egging her on. Big problem also. I don't disagree with that. But man, just that's not a normal fight where someone's just getting their head slammed into the pavement repeatedly. So I don't know. I'm a little torn. Would it make any difference? Would it have been better if she was charged an adult? I really don't know if that would have made the situation better. But man, this wasn't just a run of the mill high school fight, you know.
And that's the concern that I had, Mike, is that because of the nature. I mean, if it just would have been, you know, a regular old fight and the kid gets beat up and Kaylee gets beat up, to me, I mean, come on, kids fight all the time,
right?
But yes. That was just uniquely different in terms of how that fight ended. And I'm not saying that the court got it wrong. I'm not advocating that she should have been charged as an adult. What I'm stating is that because of that heinous nature of that ending of the fight, I could see how a judge could have found her to be charged as an adult, because as a juvenile, essentially, her record is wiped clean once she becomes an adult. And I don't know if that's the right outcome for someone who inflicted such terrible damage to another human being.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I guess another big part of this is that Kaylee actually came out of this coma. It seemed like she was going to die for a little while there.
It sure did.
It really did. And so the fact that she came out of it, I imagine, bared some impact on that decision on whether or not she would be charged as an adult or a child. But I would like to know, I want to know details about this alleged bullying leading up to the fight, because I've heard from a few news outlets and many kind of comment sections on these articles online. People seem to assert pretty confidently that Kaylee had bullied her for a long time, but that's the extent of it. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard any details, anything. And so, I mean, if that's the case, let's hear it. These kids are minors and their names are already plastered all over, you know, news outlets all over the country, the world, probably.
But,
so, I mean,
but
you know,
Mike, it's not just about the, and I'm 100% agreeing with you, Mike, but to me, it's not just that we need those details to about the kids, but we need these details so that school districts can be held accountable for allowing this kind of bullying to go on. I mean, if Kaylee was indeed bullying Marnice Duclos, then the school needs to be held accountable for allowing that bullying to be ongoing. And so I
agree. I agree.
Yeah, I don't see this as a white or a black thing. I don't see it as necessarily that one person is absolutely the aggressor and one's the victim. I see this as a teachable moment for schools to say, here's what led to a horrific injury. What can we do to prevent the next Kaylee Gaines from getting her head slammed into the pavement?
Yes, I agree. And, you know, it was not long after that, I believe, you know, teenagers got shot near Jennings or something, or another. I mean, well, you know, unfortunately.
Hey Mike, I'm going to have to cut you off here because we're coming up on a hard break, my friend. But thank you so much for calling in this evening on Camo X. I appreciate it. We've got some other folks who are also holding on the line. We've got to take a top of the hour break because, listen, Ethan, our producer, he makes a lot of money. And so we've got to go to these breaks to pay his confiscatorily high salary here at Camo X. More on At Your Service will be coming up after this. And next hour, we're going to be talking about this idea. What does it mean when we hear the term the American dream? What does that mean? Is it achievable? Is it still even in existence? Brad Young, Camo X.